Welcome, welcome. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio. This is Tom Douglas, chef owner of the Hot Stove Virtual here in downtown Seattle. Sirius Pie in downtown Seattle. Seatown Restaurant, which is going strong indoor and outdoor down in the north end of the Pike Place Market. And, of course, Sirius Takeout out in Ballard, 52nd 14th Northwest in Ballard. We are excited to be on the air. It's two of my favorite hours of the week. And the chef in the chapeau has decided to join us again today from his home office in Madison Valley.
That's right. Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, proud owner of Luc in Madison Valley, and doing to go and to go well is what we call it.
And to go well. We're
doing to go well.
Tell people about your delicious sounding vegetarian dinner box you got going on right now.
Yeah, so this week we decided to start Friday to and Saturday, and then next week, all week, Wednesday through Saturday, we're doing a winter vegetable celebration dinner box. So, you know, it's the time of the year. We came out of Valentine's and Mardi Gras and all those, the big weekend. And I was like, you know, people are probably looking for something maybe a little lighter. So I decided, you know, my customer always asks me for vegetarian and all that stuff. I'm like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a vegan, dairy-free, sugar-free, gluten-free kind of dinner. So like this, I'll encompass everybody in a major restriction department to be able to achieve that box. So, you know, butternut squash soup with truffles and endive and radicchio salad and saffron rice risotto. We have a potato cake with parsnip puree, roasted onion and oyster mushroom. And something I will talk a little bit later as my taste of the week, an orange lemon maple syrup cake with orange caramel and citrus confit. And that's
a big
no dairy,
box.
No gluten, and no sugar added.
Wow, that's very impressive. Go to luke.com to find that baby. Today we're going to talk about a restaurant classic that you can accomplish in your very own home. We have Derek Robinson here to tell us about the Black Restaurant Week that's happening as we speak. Jerry and Amy Andrews are back to tell us about charitable organizations that kind of create a self-reliance kind of category in their fundraising by putting out a product of that maybe raises money internally for themselves and for the organization. Chef Liz Kenyon and Sabrina Tinsley are here to talk about their unforgettable four-course meal at Lumen Field. I saw they got a little plug on King 5 News last night, so I saw that was happening. I wonder how many tickets they've sold. Very curious. Eating at the field, outdoors at the field. Lastly, we're going to play our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Amy was working late into the night last night on her trivia questions. And do you feel like you got us a worthy test today, Amy?
I think so. I think Rachel's going to win.
Oh, you do? Do you?
I do.
Oh, we're going to have to switch up the batting order today because maybe she's loaded. Maybe she's loaded the question box with easy ones for Rachel. That's Rachel Bell's going to be here, right?
Bell, yeah,
Rachel Bell's going to be here. You know, Terry, Rachel Bell has her Your Last Meal segment.
Yes.
And I was she's celebrating her 100th episode, and I was the very first one. How about that, huh?
I remember.
Yeah. All right, buddy, let's hear about your taste of the week. You kind of teased it. Let's hear about your taste of the week.
So this week for that, we're doing that vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free, five-course meal to go in a box.
And it's free, right?
Next
week. My understanding, it's free.
Well, it's free until you buy it, yes.
Oh.
You can actually look at it, but you can't take it until you pay for it. It's $100 for two. So, you know, it's a decent price, I think. You go to luke2go.com to get the information. But one thing that we're doing for dessert is a citrus cake. I want to call it citrus cake with cashew icing and a citrus maple confit. And I tell you, I do baking from time to time. I kind of like to dabble in the pastry station, but I have never made a gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan kind of cake before. And I played with that one a couple of times, and, you know, tweaked. I did what you're not supposed to do, which is tweak the recipe on the first turn. But it's super moist, flavorful, nice, and the icing, I tweaked it and finished with lemon, which is cashew, maple syrup, and a little bit of olive oil, and tweaked it with lemon juice at the end, and just cooked it up, and it's on top of that cake. And then I made a citrus confit of lemon and orange, cooked in maple syrup and just reduced down very, very, very slowly. And then put on top of the icing. I tell you, Tom, I was, you know, the test in my life for pastries is my wife. Mm-hmm. She's a gourmand and she likes sweets. And I'm not as big on sweet, but she definitely loves it. And passed the test with high color. I was like, oh, wow, baby.
That's a big day when you can impress your wife.
Yes, that was, and, you know, because you have to remember, we're not used to it. We don't normally go out of our way to buy vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free cake.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my taste of the week is our buddy Dominique of Gerard and Dominique, yes, the smoked salmon folks. So you see their product all over the marketplace here in the Northwest.
Awesome.
And I love a little bit of smoked salmon on hot toast in the morning for breakfast. And so I've been buying their wild Bristol Bay sockeye smoked salmon. And, yes, and I used to buy it in too big a pack. I would open it up, and then I would often end up having to throw away a little bit at the end because I just didn't eat the whole thing. And that's the same way that goes with hard smoke. This is more locked. This is a lock style that I've been buying. So now I'm paying a little bit more, but I buy it in the little 3-ounce packs,
right,
which is the perfect amount for me. Jackie's been on a sourdough binge. These kind of great little rustic breads. I put them in, get them nice and dark, and then I slather the toast with delicious butter, right? Because the sockeye is it's very lean. That the lox is very lean. It's not fatty like a king salmon. So I like the butter with it. I put the lox right on top of my toast, and I have myself a little salmon breakfast sandwich. And I just, you know, I don't know that people know that Dominique used to be one of the best chefs here in Seattle, and he's been doing this smoked fish for quite a long time now. And I really think he does.
Years.
I think he does a beautiful job.
Oh, I think it's a beautiful product. I agree, 100%. I would top that little tartine of yours with a little capers.
Yeah, just not me. It kind of it jumps into the flavor of the fish profile too much. But that's just the way I feel about it. But I do hit it with a fresh ground pepper. Because, you know, it's typically, you know, salmon like that is a little bit salty through the cure process. So just a little fresh ground pepper and my buttered crispy toast. So good. That's my taste for the week. Up next, it's Black Restaurant Week, and we're going to talk to Derek Robinson real quick. He's co-founder of this event. And so we're going to give him a shout and chat about the restaurants in town that are all part of this. On Cairo Radio, it's Tom Douglas.
Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And Chef Terry, I have been participating in the Seattle Soul of Seattle. I can't remember.
Yes, so have I.
I've been buying boxes at each of the restaurants for the 4 weeks of what this a big event that's happening during Black History Month here in Seattle. Been enjoying. I've already had a box from La Spiga. I've had a box from Cafe Campania. Daisley's box with the chicken canals last week was so delicious. Tonight I have a box, and I can't remember where. I have to go look at my email.
It's Jerk Shack.
That's where you are tonight?
Yeah, Jerk Shack.
I don't know if I am there tonight. I think I'm at Gravy tonight, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, we're kind of taking this even one step further. We're going to jump in and try and help support Black Restaurant Week here in Seattle. And I have Derek Robinson on the line. He's the co-founder of Black Restaurant Week. And I believe this is the first time it's happening in Seattle. So, Derek, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys having me on today.
So tell us about Black Restaurant Week and tell us, you know, some of the restaurants that are participating, you know, the whole process, how this got started. I'm anxious to hear.
Absolutely. So just as you mentioned before, this is our very first time coming into the Pacific Northwest region. Black Restaurant Week was founded in Houston, Texas. We actually are celebrating our sixth anniversary coming up this April. What started as a 1-week experience here in the city of Houston has sprawled out to a 2-week experience, and for us to go and host several campaigns across the nation. And again, the Pacific Northwest is our first time coming into the area, coming into the region, and we're so excited to highlight restaurants not only in Seattle, But the entire state of Washington, Oregon, restaurants in Portland, also reaching out into Alaska, as well as some restaurants in the Vancouver area, Washington and Canada alike.
That's a broad spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. So and so with the project, we go beyond just your traditional restaurant week, highlighting restaurants. We also highlight caterers, food trucks, private chefs, and any other operators that work and revolve around the Black culinary space. And we're just so excited, again, for being able to come to the region for the first time to highlight some great hidden gems in the region.
You know, it's interesting why this is important. You know, obviously all restaurants are struggling, but if you look at the actual statistics, and I was talking to Marcus Samuelson about this, that 41% of restaurant closures so far are ethnic or minority-owned restaurants compared to just 17% mm-hmm. of white-owned restaurants. And so as someone who's closed most of my restaurants, it's hard for me to fathom that the intensity of how this pandemic is hitting our ethnic restaurants.
Yeah, and that's why we're so thankful for Black Restaurant Week and just being my other colleagues and I, Fallon and Warren, just being able to really drive economic stability back to these restaurants through local means, just working with the local community, just unearthing those hidden gems. You know, it's so great to have some of those staples that you know and love, like Ezel's and things of that nature in Seattle. But there's some other folks that are in the region that we also want to make sure that are being highlighted as well, too. And we're so thankful for partners like Grubhub that's being able to support us with this effort. And as you mentioned before, COVID is a pandemic that is unfortunately not done writing at this current time. And we're definitely seeing hearing some of those stories about individuals who say, hey, I did a decent job this year, but, definitely needing some other support, being able to keep my doors open. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that, us doing our campaigns last year, because even us ourselves, we traditionally get started in the spring, but we had a late start as well, too. And every story was almost similar. And when we came through and did our campaigns in every market last year, it was a really great turnout. Those restaurants were able to keep their doors open for a few more moments, and some were even able to expand. And that's what we want to do this year, but definitely continuing on that message as far as pushing these restaurants to make sure their doors stay open.
Right, exactly. Just the diversity of availability of our restaurants, Chef Terry, having these places to choose from when you're trying to think of where you want to go for dinner tonight, is super important for the diversity of our restaurant scene here in Seattle.
That's what we try to do with Black Restaurant Week, is just being able to expand your palate, right? So, the average individual may go out to eat probably maybe 10 times in 1 month, just encouraging everyone to patron these restaurants at least twice or three times a month if they can. There's opportunities where you say, hey, look, I'm going to try this new dish. I'm going to bring a friend. And I'm also going to have an opportunity to have them cater my company function for the upcoming season or holiday, things of that nature. And so, and that's what we strive to do, being able to showcase the diversity of the restaurants in the African diaspora. So there's, for example, there's an Ethiopian restaurant that are within the Pacific Northwest that are being highlighted this year. And there's also some other traditional soul food like grandma's. The grandma's in the kitchen. They also have Delish Ethiopian cuisine in Seattle. You also have, of course, Nana's Southern Kitchen in Seattle as well, too. So, just being able to broaden your horizon when it comes to food offerings and just have fun, because food is fun, right?
Food is fun.
It's a discussion piece.
Derek, we actually, I'm on your website right now, and there's a Caribbean cuisine, Little Red Jamaican Barbecue in Seoul, and we actually ordered our entire team family meal today for lunch and dinner from restaurant. So we're so excited.
Okay, great. Okay, well, we're so excited, and thank you so much for supporting that restaurant. I mean, and you don't know how much that means to some of these small local businesses, just being able to get a big order like you guys have just done. That means the world to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we continue to encourage, just the patrons that are supporting Black Restaurant Week and just other efforts as well, too. And so, thank you so much for doing that. I really hope that you guys continue that for years to come. I also note that last year we launched our foundation called the Feed the Soul Foundation, which is an organization that aids support for marginalized businesses And of course, just also this year, working with Grubhub during the month of February, we are a part of their Donate the Change program. And so individuals who are ordering food from restaurants in the greater Seattle area and beyond are able to round up their change, if you will, to be able to support our foundation. We just had a concert last week via on Grubhub's YouTube channel featuring Anderson .Paak, the Soul Rebels, and Big Frida. And Ooh. It was a really, really great concert that you guys can also review on their YouTube page. And again, we just ask that, you know, if you are able to still support us in that effort as well, too. The program of Feed the Soul, we are supporting businesses with $10,000 of a grant to be able to for business development, such as like menu consultations and operations and marketing initiatives, and then also just also for our restaurant emergency fund, which is, as you guys have known, I know we are headquartered here in Houston, so there are some restaurants that have been impacted by the winter storms, and as well as you guys out there on the northwest side. And then lastly, we are funding scholarships to marginalized hospitality management college students through our foundation as well, too. And again, this is something y'all can also still support us with through Grubhub and donating the change within the app.
All right, Derek, we got to run, but thank you for all that great information. Get out there, folks, and support Black Restaurant Week. Support the Soul of Seattle. I know I've bought my tickets for Quest Love at the end of the month here, the 26th. Looking forward to that concert and dance party with Eduardo Jordan and his group, the Soul of Seattle. So thanks so much, Derek, and we will wish you the best of luck down there in the troubled weather of Texas. Up next, it's ground beef. We got a lot of comments down, my comments about ground beef. And I know, Terry, that really surprises you. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. Chef Terry in Madison Valley. How you doing, Chef in the Chapeau?
I am doing fantastic. Like every Friday morning, such a pleasure being with you, Mr. Tom.
Yes, indeed.
Pleasure, pleasure.
Amy, our producer, is here. And Amy, last week I talked a little bit about my not-so-love affair with ground beef. You know, I'll eat it. I'm not. It's not like how I feel about cottage cheese or beets or anything like that. I mean, I eat it, and it's perfectly good. It's just not something I crave.
Sure.
I don't have any craveable ground beef dishes in my repertoire. So I said that last week because we picked up a half a steer that we had bought half of our neighbor's steer, split it with another neighbor, and now I have on my hands a few hundred pounds of ground beef. And yes, we got lots of comments. We'll just donate it to the food bank. I know I could donate it. That's not really the point of the conversation. Right. I did donate some to my sister-in-law and to my mother-in-law, and, you know, I did my part.
Yeah.
But we bought the steer for a reason. We didn't buy it to donate. We bought it for the winter, you know, to have for the year for the farm. Anyway, we got a lot of comments. Tell me about what you found.
You did. We had a lot of people comment on Facebook, and I got some emails.
Were they haters, or were they just trying to help me find a dish that resonates with me and makes me want to crave ground beef?
Yeah, no, it was all love, actually. I was hoping there was going to be a few haters for you. but no, we had some great dishes. Listener Kristen makes a quick bulgogi, which that to me sounds like a winner. So I'm going to pick Kristen for our beefy prize winner on this. Linda makes awesome chili, of course. A listener, Emily, lived in Japan, and she made niku miso, which is ground meat seasoned with miso, sake, mirin, and spooned over white rice. That sounds delicious. You would love that.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
I would love that. I was giving a talk to the students at the University of Washington Foster's School of Business yesterday, and I, you know, it was an hour and a half class, and you get off on tangents, and I went off a little bit about running a business and the little funny things that you run into. And of course, the steer that I bought from my neighbors in Prosser, I can't use in the business because it's just a local butcher, and you know, everything for the business has to be inspected. So this student, who was a Japanese guy, Isaac, said he gave me another kind of Japanese beef stewy, but tomato based with sesame oil.
Ooh.
And put over pan-fried noodles, like yakisoba type
that
scenario.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, man, I think I could. Well, between that and the one you just read, those are two that actually.
Yeah, that's my truth.
Yeah. And Chef Eric Tanaka sent one in, his bolognese sauce. I mean, how can you forget that?
I didn't forget bolognese, and I do crave bolognese once in a while. That would be probably, of all the different ground beef dishes, I crave bolognese much more than I crave a burger or a taco or, you know.
What about a Swedish meatball?
Well, Tom, you also make good stuffed cabbage, which I think stuffed cabbage with ground beef is delicious.
Yeah, you know, Chef, I tend to use veal. I like a little bit lighter, a little lighter, and I use a combination of veal and turkey or veal and chicken in my meatballs. So,
but beef and bacon inside cabbages, that would be
beef and bacon.
That would be delicious.
Yeah, and so, Chef, you read some of these. Did any of them strike you?
Well, that last one, the Japanese one, because to me it's the most furthest away from anything I would do. But it also sounds so clean and lean. I love the idea of the miso sake mirin, you know, just over white rice. I mean, that sounds so clean to me. I love that kind of flavor. And then even better, Emily says, inside onigiri. That would be totally left wing for me.
Yeah. Well, so onigiri is a rice cake, right? So she's saying take the cold, like make that very same stew, chill it,
right,
and then wrap your rice cake around it, and so that when you reheat your rice cake or pan fry, if you want to pan fry your rice cake, then you have that stuffed onigiri. That sounds pretty good too, pretty fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, that would be my take out of all the others. Are definitely, there's tons and tons of people giving many different ideas of how they make it. I love the idea of the kebabs. When I was in Morocco, my last trip in Morocco, that was one thing that was really interesting. They use a lot of ground beef, just plain like this, like almost like padded burger, and then they put it on the grill on the charcoal, not charcoal, on the wood grill, and then they put that inside nice little bread, you know, burger bread. That's so delicious and so simple.
So is it like kefta, like the Lebanese style, where you mix it with bulgur wheat? And so, I mean, that's what you see in that area, is you take, say, 50% beef and 50% cooked bulgur, and then you kind of make a paste out of that, and you put it on to kebab sticks.
Right. So you get that, but you also get, they also do in a lot of places, you know, you go in a gas station and there's a few people cooking around the gas station, have a nice kind of like the food area where they have an open pit and an oven and some Berber woman making some nice bread on the spot and cooking it like right there, some nice flat bread. And then they grill the beef right on the fire and then they put that into your bread and they give it to you. And you're like, it's just bread and beef. But I'm like, damn, that is so good. Just grill like that, fresh.
Oh. Yeah. It's the original food truck rodeo, except there's no truck.
I tell you one thing. We have not invented anything. We just polished it.
Exactly. Amy, tell us of the people that responded.
Yeah, Loco Moco. I thought that was a good reminder of that dish.
That is a ground beef patty with gravy?
Yeah. Remember, did you have it at Tanaka-san? So delicious.
Yes.
I think we added a fried egg on rice. Did you try our empanadas at our empanada pop-up a couple weeks ago?
I didn't. You know, somebody forgot to tell me that we had an empanada
pop-up.
That
was probably me.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I'm just saying.
Well, that was a real standout dish. We did a picadillo empanada, and those sold out very quickly. So that's a standout dish for sure.
Uh-huh. You know, those pop-ups are super fun.
Yeah.
And they sell out all the time. I'm surprised that people's I shouldn't say I'm surprised, but I'm thankful for people's interest in, like, let's go do this. It sounds like a fun outing.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what it's coming to these days when you do pop-ups outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
It's an outing for people that are stuck at home
because
they don't have to get out of their car if they don't want to. And when they do get out of the car, the pop-up is outside, right?
Yeah.
So it feels much safer, and we have picnic tables, and it's super fun.
Yeah, it's cute to see people sitting in the trunk.
I'm thinking of doing a foie gras pop-up. Do you think that's going to be hot?
I think that's a good idea, Chef, and I think that your little, put on those cassette burners with all your little cast iron pans, seared.
Outside, on the burners.
And then I would just do like a little foie gras brioche sandwiches.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Mm. Be there, order it, pay for it, move 5 feet, it's ready, go.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, it's a simple thing, process if you put it all online, right? Just have people pay for it online before they even get there. So you don't even have to pay for it there. So
just get a number. When we yell your number, your foie gras is ready.
Yeah. Good idea, Chef. Let me know when that's going to happen. what's the condiment? If you were to make a foie gras sandwich, well, what kind of condiment would you put on there? There's enough fat, so you don't need any mayo or anything like that.
I think it's salt and pepper and some kind of a sweet and sour confit fruit. So I probably, this time of year, I would think maybe like dried apricots, and I would transform into a nice little sweet and sour chutney, and then put that on the brioche, put the foie gras on top of it, squeeze, and eat.
Yeah, that sounds great. Amy, do you think there's any correlation to the fact that we were talking about what to do with ground beef and Chef Terry immediately moves to foie gras?
Yeah, I think so.
Duck liver and ground beef, let's think.
A little diced foie gras in your ground beef would definitely be delicious. Yeah,
exactly. Bastia, that's an area that I had thought about. Well, yeah. I was trying to think of some dishes after I said that last week that I really do like and I kind of enjoyed. And Moroccan Bastia, huh?
Yeah.
Terry, have you had that before?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
good.
Bastia, that's absolutely delicious. It's a bit sweet for me. It's a bit too sweet to have I'm not used to have my meat being that sweet, but it's a delicious dish for sure.
So that,
and when it's done well, it's all about the crust anyway. You know, the crust and the beef. The beef being good, the crust.
So it's ground beef, and it's cooked with what? Honey and cinnamon and clove.
And currants.
And raisins.
Currants. Pine nuts.
Yeah, and then it's layered in a pastry. Is it always phyllo?
Like a phyllo.
Yeah, and then
yeah, it's phyllo. I mean, that's what we do it here. We use phyllo, but it's many layers of phyllo, and then it's baked, and obviously it's very crispy, and it's a delicious dish, and then sprinkled with honey.
Mm-hmm.
Good honey. Super good honey, and it's one of those dish, definitely a very traditional Moroccan dish. Mm-hmm.
You know, Chef Charters actually has a Bastia class coming up at Hot Stove, which I bet you didn't know about.
I did not know about that either. Thanks there, Ames.
You should join it. It's going to be so fun.
Mm. You know, I watched Tamara Murphy make Bastia on Iron Chef when I was in the audience waiting for my episode to happen. She was the episode after me or before me or something, and then she was making, I think, a squab Bastia, which I don't think is...
That's traditional, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Tamara Murphy's got one of my favorite restaurants here in town up there on Capitol Hill. It's called... Why is it escaping me right
now?
Terra Plata, yeah. I kept coming to Brasa, and that's the one that was down here. But Terra Plata, right up on Capitol Hill. Literally one of my favorite restaurants in Seattle. I just love the feel of that place, and the food is magnificent.
And the terrace is beautiful.
Terrace is one of a kind. Do we get enough ground beef out there ideas? I feel like I have been helped across the finish line. I'm a changed man.
Yeah.
We'll see about that. Up next, it's Baked Alaska. I did a little event here at the Hot Stove for evening, the TV show on King of Five TV. Which I've been doing for 7 or 8 years now. And this time I did Baked Alaska. And it struck me that we just don't talk about it enough. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. I hope you're hungry because we're going to talk about Baked Alaska. Well, a dynamic dessert that almost always, I guess you really see it in restaurants more than any place else. Because of its dramatic effect, the kind of different layers, the effort that it takes to make it. So it tends to be a restaurant dessert. And so today we're going to talk about that. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in hats.
And Chef, when we were talking off air about Baked Alaska, you said you learned how to make that when you were an apprentice in France. And
that's correct.
I couldn't believe you even knew where Alaska was.
Well, I did not know.
You're
I thought it was a country.
14 years
back
old.
Then. No, yeah, Baked Alaska was very popular when I was apprentice, and it's popular in restaurants in France, especially back in, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s. It was a big, big table dessert. You know, if you were a family of like 8 or 10 on a Sunday, having a big lunch in a restaurant, Baked Alaska was definitely a table kind of dessert because it's not the kind of dessert you make for one. It's kind of like it's usually a big cake because you have a cake on the bottom, you have ice cream on top. You have meringue all around it. You put it in the freezer. So first of all, the reason you don't see it a lot is because also it takes a lot of space. If you start making 10 baked Alaska, you've got your entire freezer blocked.
Yeah, exactly.
So not many people can actually do that. But anyway, the reason we were doing baked Alaska and meringue, most importantly, we had two or three desserts with meringue because every Sunday when I come in, when I came in for 2 years, I was making pâte à choux for pomme dauphinoise, which is mashed potato and pâte à choux together. Then you fry, you know, wrapped in breadcrumb and then fried. So you have those little fried potato ball kind of idea. And mm-hmm. I would do that, a whole batch of it every Sunday. But for the pâte à choux, you need the egg yolks. So we had all these egg whites. Mm-hmm. So every Sunday, we process meringue as well. So we'd use all those egg whites. And we had a very old coal stove, like 1890, beautiful stove. And they would have a perfect oven to dry overnight all the meringue. Then we would pipe in on sheet pan or whatever. So that was perfect for the meringue desserts. And then for you, of course, use the fresh meringue for the baked Alaska. So we built baked Alaska at the same time. That was such a beautiful thing. And you're right. You know what? It's a great idea, Tom, to bring those classic back, because people forget about it, or they, most importantly, they just don't know.
They just don't know. So Amy, Amy, producer Amy, why don't you tell us where Baked Alaska originated from?
Well, it's interesting. It looks like there are a few different places, but I'm going to go back to the first one. It looks like in 1867, French chef Charles Ranhofer from New York of Delmonico's restaurant lays claim to its creation. And he put it on the menu to celebrate the purchase of Alaska from Russia.
Ah, that makes total sense right there. Because it does look like old iceberg.
That man wrote a cookbook that is the size of a, like, it's 6-inch thick. Uh-huh. It's amazing.
Huh. Interesting.
I actually have a copy of it. It's beautiful.
Well, as I'm known to do sometimes, I like to take the cheater method of how to get to a, a place that I feel is acceptable for Baked Alaska, but without all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to do some stuff. So in my book, Seattle Kitchen, I have a Baked Alaska recipe there where we make chocolate shortbreads, we make the cherry ice cream, we make the meringue and all that sort of stuff. In my short one that I did on Evening, when is this going to show on Evening?
Aired on Wednesday this week, but I'm going to put a link today on our Facebook page.
Oh, you can get the, you can go on and see. Yeah. What I liked about my shortcut is that I just bought maybe 3 or 4 different kinds of cookies to see how they would work. And I bought little chocolate wafers, even though, you know, just those Nabisco chocolate wafers that people grind up for, like, cheesecake crust or something, like mud pie or something like that. I bought some nice little ginger wafers, which I thought was good. I bought some waffle cookies, which actually probably worked out best for the size of the dessert. They were more like a 2 or 3 inch wide by about a 2 inch deep, you know, a little oval. So they could take 2 scoops of ice cream, basically. The other cookies I found that were edible were only 1 scoopers. And then I scooped a thing of Whidbey Island cherry almond ice cream on top of each, put it in the freezer to freeze the ice cream, and while I made my meringue. So, Chef, I had to make, I'm not the baker that you are. I had to make meringue 3 times for my demo because my first 2 failed. Well, I was trying to get a meringue that was cooked a little bit, so I couldn't remember whether it was Swiss or, but it's the Italian meringue. It's the Italian meringue where you take the egg whites, you beat them up into a soft peak or so, and then on the side, I was making a simple syrup out of sugar, but it's 3/4 sugar. Simple syrup is 1 to 1 sugar to water. Simple syrup, I mean, this sugar that I was making was 3/4 or so cup of sugar to maybe 1/3 of a cup of water. And then you take it to a 250 degrees, a softball stage.
Yeah.
And then as the mixture is beating, you don't want to overbeat your egg whites before you get to this spot. So with soft peaks, as the mixture's beating, you pour in this hot sugar syrup, which kind of cooks your eggs at the same time. Probably not health department done, but certainly more done. And it made a beautiful, stiff, hard peak meringue. And I was very pleased with my 3rd effort to get it right.
It's very interesting because most people don't know, but there is 3 types of meringue. There's a French meringue, which is non-cooked sugar and egg white.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Italian meringue with the sugar, you say. And then there's a Swiss meringue, which I haven't made in probably 35 years, 40 years, and I can't remember exactly what the difference is between Italian and
the Swiss one, you put the egg whites on a water bath, and you kind of get that kind of up.
Oh, that's right. That's what it is.
And warm, and
Correct. You basically start cooking the egg whites and the sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's the three different type of meringue. Most people are not familiar with that, but
right.
Yeah, the Italian meringue is a great meringue if you want to hold it and if you want to cook for it,
right.
Cook with it. I mean,
right, because it doesn't weep like a lot of exactly. meringues do. So anyway, so right. I get out my pastry bag and I fill in my pastry bag with my meringue and I pull out my cookies with the ice cream frozen on top with the round scoop. And I do all my little fancy piping tips around my meringue. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And then I took a spoon and I just spooned a bunch of meringue on top and did the back of the spoon to make little peaks. And
oh, yeah.
Once I did the peaks, you were there, Amy, right?
I think that was my favorite.
That was my favorite. Once mm-hmm. I did it like with a hand and got rid of the piping bag, which you know, a lot of people don't have in their home, and I just did it with the spoon and created these little peaks with my spoon. Once I did that and then I browned it with the torch, that was the one that looked the best.
Yeah,
it looked
cool.
Wild and very Alaska mm-hmm. and very hand done, and I like that. So, if you want to learn how to do this dish, maybe you should watch my segment on evening, and maybe you too could learn how to make
things. I'm going
to
be on it as soon as we finish the show. I'm going to be learning it.
Baked Alaska. Or, you know, Chef, you could just buy my book.
Yeah. Oh, you could just also start from scratch and make a nice Genoise. And then put the vanilla ice cream on top, which is a classic.
Uh-huh.
And then make a nice Italian meringue and finish it that way. Bake it in the oven at 450 degrees or right under the broiler and give it a beautiful, beautiful baked Alaska.
Yeah,
and
I think the torch works better than baking.
By the way, the classic is flambé at the table.
Oh,
you
yes.
Pour in some beautiful
yes.
brandy and flambé.
Yes, exactly. That is the classic. And don't be afraid to get some dark edges on your meringue. Don't do this blondie stuff, right? You know, you want some dark.
Yeah, it's like,
it gets depth to the whole look of the dish when you add the dark peaks.
It's like marshmallow.
Yeah, the white valleys look much, much better when you add the dark peaks. What a fun first hour. We've got another whole hour to come. We're excited to be with you. We're here every Saturday and Sunday. Thanks for listening, or you can check us out on podcast. We're going to move on to Jerry and Amy from the XOBC, the Brandy Carlile Wine CSA or whatever club, Brandy Carlile Wine Club, XOBC. When we come back on Cairo Radio, it's Tom Douglas and Terry Rotrow, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, hour number two. Thanks for hanging with us. Chef Terry, how are you doing over there?
I am doing beautiful. How are you doing, Tom?
Coffee
is feeling really good right now.
I know, exactly. You know, Chef, we've got Jerry and Amy back, Jerry and Amy Andrews from the XOBC Cellars. They're back to talk about the Looking Out Foundation and raising money for that. Chef Liz Kenyon and Sabrina Tinsley are going to be here to talk about the field-to-table events that are happening down at Lumen Field with the SE Productions. Rachel Bell's here to celebrate her 100th episode of her fantastic podcast, Your Last Meal. And, you know, Chef, I was the original episode. I was episode number one.
And that's why it's so successful, Tom.
Maybe that's it. That must be it. Of course, we're going to wrap up the show. Rachel's going to join us, and we're going to play Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, as we do every week. We thank you for joining us. And, you know, Chef, I had the opportunity this month, every Friday night, to get a dinner from one of our Black-owned restaurants here in Seattle during the Soul of Seattle. And the first week, I got it from Chef Sabrina Tinsley at La Spiga up there on Capitol Hill. And a dynamic pork and potato dish with salad and a delicious. Sabrina, what was that dessert? It was like melting your mouth, so light and airy and beautiful.
The torta di nocciola. I love that dessert. That's my favorite. So that is a flourless chocolate hazelnut cake. It is so, like you said, it's light and airy. It doesn't fit in your stomach because there's no flour in it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And the chocolate and hazelnut are just perfect together.
Lovely. So, Liz, why don't you jump in and tell us about this field-to-table event that you and Sabrina are working on for Lumen Field down there in the Sports District of Seattle.
Totally, yeah. So super excited about it when they brought this to me. And, you know, it's an outdoor dining room, and I think it's going to be a great experience for any diner. It's super safe. And so what it is, we're doing four courses, and everything's coming out, and everybody gets to enjoy some beer and wine right there on the table. or right there on the field. So, you know, there's two seatings a night, one at 5:15 and 8:30. You know, groups, we're keeping the groups a little bit smaller, you know, 2 to 6 per person or per table. So it's going to be a nice, nice, you know, experience for diners that, that haven't, you know, this has never happened on Lumen Field.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be a super special experience.
So Liz, I've eaten at the Rupee Bar a few times now, gotten it to go, eaten there before COVID. It's such a hot happening place. Is your menu going to be look like what it looks like at the Rupee Bar?
A little bit, yeah. We're gonna keep to the traditional chutneys, and we're gonna figure out how to get some naan out there, and then we are gonna have some special items on the menu. So we're gonna have those staples that we have at Rupee Bar, and then. And then I'm going to throw you guys some new stuff.
All right. Hey, Chef Terry, Chef Terry, have you seen Sabrina lately at La Spiga? You guys live in the same neighborhood almost.
Well, I've been to La Spiga many times, but I haven't been lately because I haven't been out lately. In the last 3 months, I've been kind of steady, you know, staying home and trying to stay safe as mm-hmm. much as possible. So I haven't, but La Spiga is such a memorable restaurant. There's no way. If you've been in that restaurant once, you don't forget it. It's a beautiful restaurant. The food is delicious, very humble, gorgeous, very well made. I've never had a bad meal. I recommend it for sure. Yeah. If you haven't been, you should try it for sure.
Well, Sabrina, what are you going to make down there at Lumen Field that is going to fill out these four courses?
Yeah, thank you for that plug, Terry, by the way. That was beautiful. So we are going to start off with some classics. So we'll just do an antipasto platter with some salame that's imported from Italy, and some pecorino cheese, and some roasted eggplants with salsa verde. And that'll be obviously plated with some ciabatta from Macrina Bakery. We have a little soup to kind of warm your soul after that. It's going to be a roasted butternut squash soup. And that'll be followed by the entree. So our main entree is going to be braised beef cheeks. We call that stracotto alla parmigiana. So it's Parmesan, Parma style beef cheek. There's no Parmesan in it, though. This is a dairy-free recipe. and that's served with crispy polenta. And if you are a vegetarian, we have a vegetarian entree as well. That's going to be a vegetarian lasagna. And then the dessert is going to be panna cotta with bitter caramel and crispy meringue.
Super fun. Mm. I imagine you have wines and everything to match. And then there's also a opportunity to buy a ticket to raise money for Big Table. You want to tell us about that, Liz?
Big Table, it's the only nonprofit in the country focused on providing crisis care and ongoing coaching, supporting, restaurants, hospitality workers, people in need. So people can buy a ticket to that and kick a field goal, and everything goes to Big Table.
Super fun. And I know many of our team over the last few years have had the opportunity to benefit from Big Table's open table, so to speak, and their efforts on mental health and their efforts on housing and all the different things that they try to help jump in on for restaurant workers around the country. So good for you guys and good for them for doing their field goal kick. Amy, do you want to tell us all the details where people can buy tickets and how much they cost and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, you can buy tickets at fieldtotable.us. The four-course menu is priced at $100 per person plus service charge. This looks like the first time you can actually sit and dine on the field, so that is super cool. There are two seatings per night at 5:15 and 8:30. Sabrina, your dinner is both February 25th and 26th, and Chef Liz's is on March 7th.
So it sounds like a good old time. Hopefully the weather cooperates. That would be nice. So you can run around the field and have a ball. I did get to throw out the first pitch one time at a game, and it's so dynamic to be down there on the field and look up at all the stadium and the fans and all that sort of thing. So, thank you, team, for coming on and sharing the field to table opportunity for folks to participate in.
My pleasure. Thank you
so much.
All right. That's Liz from Rupee Bar over there in Ballard on 24th and Sabrina from La Spiga up on 12th on Capitol Hill. So go out and support them. When we come back, it is time for Amy and Jerry to talk about the Looking Out Foundation and XOBC, Brandi Carlile's Wine Club. When we come back on Cairo, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Tom Douglas, chef from the Chapeau, coming to us from Madison Valley, his home office in Madison Valley. Chef, last week we talked with Jerry and Amy Andrews about XOBC, Brandi Carlile's Wine Club, and the delicious wines that they're presenting. But we also talked about the Cathedral Within, which is how some of these nonprofits are raising funds for themselves through different business venues, opportunities. So let's listen in to our interview from last week on Cairo Radio. Welcome back to the show, Jerry and Amy Andrews from Walla Walla.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So last week we talked a bit about the flavors of the wine in the Walla Walla Valley and the essence that it comes through from all the big rock and the trouble that wine grapes have to go through just to give themselves interesting flavors. You know, they have to dig deep with their roots, and that's why terroir is so important in all winemaking, really. We talked a little bit about the sparkling rosé last week and that it's going to be in the Live Nation venues when venues happen again to help fund some charitable organizations. Let's talk about the Looking Out Foundation. So this is XOBC is a project by Jerry and Amy and Brandi Carlile. So tell us about the project itself and then maybe what you're trying to do for the Looking Out Foundation.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Tom. So we started the organization about 2 years ago, really with the intent of becoming an avenue by which we could continue to fund the Looking Out Foundation. The Looking Out Foundation was founded by Brandi and the twins many years ago to really make music mean more and to be able to have an impact in the community for primarily underprivileged women and children. Now that's evolved into a variety of different areas that we support, including War Child, which gets small children out of conflict zones. We have a COVID relief fund. We support Black Lives Matter. So there's a lot of work that we do both on a local level and globally that we're incredibly proud of. And we wanted to, again, find a mechanism by which we could continue to fund the Looking Out Foundation. And we decided since we all love wine, that's the way in which we should do it. We've been getting to know the wine industry and the winemakers out in Walla Walla for the last 10 years or so. Sean Boyd is one of our favorites, and he is our partner in this project, and we're making wines that we're incredibly proud of that really showcase the terroir of Walla Walla and that our community of collectors seem to love. So we're membership-based. We do have a couple ways in which people can buy our wine outside of the membership, but this is really designed to create something special with a group of people who are activists and who understand our mission and want to be a part of it.
And Amy, it's so exciting, the whole project. Where do you fit in on this, and what's your specialty within this organization?
I shouldn't answer that question. I should let Jerry answer that question.
Tom, you should know this by now. Amy makes it all happen. She is the key to the whole thing. So, you know, literally Amy has built this brand. She touches every single one of our collectors and she makes the whole thing sing. And that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah. So Tom, when we started, you know, we launched in June of 2019 and I would say a few years prior to that when Jerry and I and Brandi and Catherine were on holiday together, that's really when we started talking about making wine. And we just, you know, we're always brainstorming with them additive ways that we can give back to the foundation. And as you know, we've done house parties here at the Andrews residence to create a way by which people can experience Brandi's music and also give back. Brandi and Catherine, when they are on tour, they donate $2 from every ticket sale to LOF. Obviously, now that we're in COVID, we've had such a plethora of funds going to LOF from the wine. It's made a huge impact while they can't tour. So when we were discussing on holiday what we could do for the foundation, we thought, you know, we love wine, obviously, and we also felt that those, the fans and the community and those that are typically drawn to philanthropy, they always want to do more. And so we felt like saying, hey, activists, we want to thank you for all that you do for us, right? I mean, these people have supported the foundation for years, and we felt like there was a way that we could give something to them, really great wine, and in return, you know, they would just so happen to be, you know, giving to LOS. Mm-hmm. So when we launched in June of 2019, I was the one kind of behind the scenes, you know, 8 months prior to that, doing the branding and the website and every single transaction that, that happens with XOBC sellers, coming up with the name, all of that, fell into my lap. And it's been, such a beautiful blessing because I feel like I can really, connect with this community. You know, I do talk to our collectors, on a daily basis, and it's amazing what these activists have been able to do and how much money we've been able to raise through the foundation through XOBC sellers.
And of course, the wine is needs to, you know, the danger in this kind of scenario is that the wine doesn't match up to the hype or to Brandy's reputation or all of that kind of stuff. You guys have done a masterful job of making a really delicious selection of wine. I in front of me, I have the sparkling rosé, the Elijah, which is a Grenache, 100% Grenache. I have the Catherine, which is 100% Syrah, and then I have the Evangeline, which is kind of a rosé of Syrah and Grenache. If people don't know why these wines have these names, they're not following very close. But why don't you tell us anyway?
Yeah, so the backstory on this is that, you know, when we started discussing what this wine would look like, Brandy said, I love it. This is going to be fantastic. I'm so excited about the endeavor. She said, but here's my one requirement. This has to be fantastic wine. There's no way I'm putting my family's name on this unless this is fantastic wine. So we loved that. We ran with that. And when we worked with Sean Boyd to really come up with these, you know, these wines that we're incredibly proud of, we decided that we should name them after Brandy's family. So Amy, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, obviously we have a BC cab that's not in front of you right now. Because we're sold out. We're about to bottle our next vintage of the BC Cab. Catherine, obviously, is Brandy's wife, and that's our 100% Syrah, a fan favorite, my personal favorite. The Elijah is 100% Grenache. That's one of Brandy and Catherine's daughters. The Evangeline is the Rosé, and that is Brandy and Catherine's other daughter.
And with a song named after her, too, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Of course. I think they all have songs named after them in some way, shape, or form.
You know, I'm a big fan. I use Brandy's music as my lead-in. You know, I'm a very, very important superstar when it comes to culinary television. Mm-hmm. And so I have a writer in my show where, you know, I have to have pink M&Ms, I have to have a Baby Ruth bar, and then I also need to have Brandy Carlisle singing stories on my way in. And the other night I was showing people your wine during my class, and Sean, our tech genius, forgot to put on stories for me to walk into class. And so we had the way out, and we had a dance party to Brandy Carlisle on the way out of class.
Nice.
Just saying.
Nice. Tom, are you a diva?
Oh, yes.
Well, you know.
Oh, yes.
You know,
oh, yes.
I'm not getting a haircut until I get a vaccine, so I'm starting to look like a diva. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm really, really proud of you guys for starting this up and for the conscious choice behind it to fund this foundation and all the good things the foundation does. I remember way back when in the beginning of the foundation, it kind of was started after that tragedy that happened in South Park, if I'm not mistaken, where two young women were attacked. And you were, I think your first thing you started to do was teach young women how to defend themselves.
You're absolutely right. That was one of the very first endeavors for the organization. That's a great memory, and you know, some of these things are born out of tragedy and turn into really fantastic friendships and ways in which to change the world. So you're accurate.
Well, we're really proud of you here, Chef Terry. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, fantastic work. I'm just very happy that there is more than just Tom and many other people in the community doing some fabulous work to just elevate the people who are not so fortunate. Yeah. And I think it's very cool.
All right, get out there.
Thank you so much.
And try the XOBC wine. Well, Chef Terry, I'm sorry you weren't here last week to try all the wines. They were quite delicious. Up next, we have our friend Rachel Bell is going to join us to celebrate the 100th episode of her show, Your Last Meal. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. It's time to return to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And we're laughing because we have our pal Rachel Bell on Zoom, and she's naked, which is an amazing thing. And
a lot of people laugh when they see me naked.
Yeah, exactly. Rachel Bell is here, one of the funniest people I know, and she knows it too. So there you go. I'm Tom Douglas. And I've already said that, but here's the point. You know, Rachel, this could be your last meal because this is show 100 for you in your podcast, Your Last Meal.
Yeah. So I started this podcast 4.5 years ago, but, you know, only up to 100 episodes. It takes a lot to produce the show. Mm-hmm. And Tom Douglas, who has said his name twice, so you already know it, was guest number one. So I'll just give a quick overview of what the podcast is. I interview celebrities like Tom Douglas, also people like William Shatner and Ben and Jerry and other people I can't remember right now because I'm with my, you know, I'm really good at this. Danny Trejo and Moby, Iron and Wine, all of these people. Mm-hmm. And then I talk to them about their life and food and what their last meal would be. And then based on what the meal is, I interview other people to get into the history and the science and the culture of that dish. So Tom was number one. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to play a clip from that episode because a lot of people tell me, honestly, that it is their favorite episode.
You are lying through your teeth right now.
I am not because... Don't you think the first is always garbage? Like you go back and you watch the pilot of your favorite show and you're like, ugh. But I listened back to it this morning and it is good because you're so good. So this isn't your last meal. I'm not revealing that. But let's just listen to this clip.
I do have a phobia about my last meal. I was going in for a colonoscopy yesterday and there's a percentage chance that you could die on the table. And so I really thought about the night before what was going to be my last dinner before my surgical procedure. And I sat there at the palace kitchen and I had all my favorite things off the menu at the palace as my last supper. I mean,
was that the first time that you'd had a last meal or have you done this before?
Oh, no, I've done it before. Yeah.
How many last meals have you had?
Probably a dozen.
Really?
Where you think that there's an opportunity you might get killed. And I was worried about in some sort of travel about my last meal. So I want it to be good.
So what was your last meal before your colonoscopy?
My last meal was...
before Tom was roto-rooted, his words, not mine, he had a rather gluttonous last meal that started with pork belly.
It wasn't properly prepared, so I had to send it back in my own restaurant. But the other three things that I had were delicious, which was the classic, I don't know if you've ever had our chicken wings at the Palace Kitchen, but they are soaked in Tabasco and garlic and soy sauce and mustard for a day. And then they get put on the wood fire and then roasted till the meat kind of falls off the bone and serve them with a cilantro sour cream. Delicious.
That sounds delicious.
And then another dish was the little pleen that we've had on the menus for 21 years. And I learned how to make these in the town of Barbaresco in Alba, Italy. Stuffed with milk braised pork butt. For my last dish, I had strawberry shortcake because that is on my all-time list of favorite desserts. Fresh biscuits, little pile of whipped cream. Awesome.
So, Rachel, were you inspired by my colonoscopy to go get one? Because, you know, we all need to get those.
Yeah. Yeah. For my 100th anniversary, I'm getting 100 colonoscopies. Tomorrow, all on the same day.
I like it. I like it.
But what I am doing for the 100th episode, which is out on February 25th, is instead of interviewing a celebrity, I decided to interview 100-year-old people. So I have three 100-year-old women talking about their lives and food and their last meals, which some people think is a little bit awkward because they're so old. But you know what? people who are that old, they don't care. They just want to talk about anything, really. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. Only women live to be 100. It's how funny how that works. But, you know, when I was I was visiting a friend at Mirabella for her 90th birthday, and we sat in the dining room up there. And those retirement homes, they get some pretty good service around there. Anything they want for their last meal. So anyway, Rachel, you know, last meals are a funny thing. You never know when they are going to happen. And I got into serious trouble when I was a chef on Alaska Airlines because one of the first things I said on the radio was, you know, I think you or somebody asked me what do I look forward to for being the chef for Alaska? This is like 10 years ago when I first started. And I said, well, you know, if the plane crashes, I want to make sure that the food I had was something I cooked for my last meal. And boy, did I get in trouble from Alaska Airlines for that. You never mentioned that on the air. No.
But us lay people, we don't know what you're not supposed to mention. We're just full of inappropriate comments at all times.
Exactly.
That's the thing with the show that I always try to say is it's not supposed to be morbid. It doesn't really have to do with death. It's just kind of narrowing down the food that is most important to you. And so that's what's interesting about talking to people who are rich and famous. You know, most people don't say lobster. Most people want something that their mom made. Most people want something sentimental or something they had when they traveled. But the best last meals are the weirdos. So I mentioned Moby earlier, the singer. Mm-hmm. He wants for his last meal a single organic orange eaten mindfully and silently by himself, which is the Mobius thing ever. Yeah.
See, I would be probably more like Tom. I would want a party. Like, let's celebrate this. This is a great thing when you can actually predict you're going to die and you know it's going to be your last meal. Make it great. Make it fun.
Rachel, have you ever interviewed anyone on death row that was actually coming up to their last meal?
No, but I did interview a guy who used to cook the death row meals in Texas when he was a prisoner, because they have the fellow prisoners in the kitchen cooking them. And he did that for, I think, about 7 years. And so in Texas, when they stopped doing last meals, like, you could always just get whatever you wanted, which whatever you wanted wasn't really true, because they only had what they had in the cafeteria. So this guy told me if someone wanted lobster, he would take the breading off of fish sticks, and that was their lobster. You couldn't get like a real lobster delivered. But one kind of bad apple, if you will, kind of ruined it for the bunch in Texas. I don't know if you remember the story where this guy ordered like 30 things for his last meal and then didn't eat a single bite as his kind of last middle finger to the system. Mm-hmm. And they said, that's it. We're using you as an example. Now you're getting for your last meal what everyone else is eating in the cafeteria that day. So this guy that I had interviewed, who was since out of prison, was pushing really hard to get the last meals back because he thought that it was important that these people got one last thing before they were killed.
Mm-hmm. That is, it's you're right. It is a morbid concept, but we had fun when I did it with you. And I'm a person who believes in celebrating the life lived and not necessarily being sad about the life lost. I mean, if it was a well-lived life, it should be a celebration.
Exactly. Yeah. Duff McKagan, you know, from Guns N' Roses, he had one that I think you'll both appreciate as being chefs. His last meal is the family meal that he ate when he was 19 or 20, when he was a cook at the Black Angus Steakhouse. And there was this meal that he was taught by his Hispanic coworkers in the kitchen, that they would kind of like take this and that and kind of mix it all together. And that is still like a meal that he makes for his family today. It was the family meal from Black Angus Steakhouse from like 30 years ago.
Isn't that crazy?
Cool.
Probably the one in Federal Way that's still open.
It could be. I've been getting press releases from them lately. I was like, oh, God, good for you. I didn't know you guys were still around. Exactly. But yeah, the show, it's for, you know, it's for people who like food. It's for people who like food history. Ken Jennings, of course, from Jeopardy. He is from Utah. He's Mormon. So we talked a lot about Jell-O and Jell-O casseroles, which is really common in that culture. And I interviewed the curator of the Jell-O Museum in upstate New York, and she said people in Utah eat more Jell-O than anyone else in the entire world.
Oh, wow.
That explains a lot of things. Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, what's the most, besides the guy with the orange, I mean, that's definitely another one, but what would you call the oddest one that you were totally not expecting? Or are all of them not expected?
Well, on the same kind of vein from John Waters, which, of course, I kind of was expecting this, the filmmaker, because he is such a wonderful weirdo who makes very strange films. He wanted a single leaf of arugula because he said when he dies, he wants to be a tidy corpse and he didn't want anything leaving his body. But I had to inform him that he wasn't the first one to bring that concept up. So Mary Roach, who is a science writer, she told me when she was a guest on the show that if you want to be a tidy corpse, you should eat only proteins before you die because it's the roughage that makes for a mess. And I'm totally disproving what I said earlier. I swear to you, this podcast is not gross and death oriented, but now it's seeming like it is. But there's been some dishes I'd never heard of before that I've learned from my guests, like Gail Simmons, who is a guest or excuse me, a judge on Top Chef, longtime food writer. Her last meal is banoffee pie, which is a really popular dessert in England I'd never heard about and is now, I swear to God, one of my top three favorite desserts I've ever made. It is layers of dulce de leche, fresh bananas, and whipped cream and peanuts. And it is so damn good with like a chocolate cookie crust.
Yeah, it doesn't sound rich at all.
Sounds like an ice cream sundae. Yeah, chef. Exactly. So, Rachel, I understand you've volunteered to be our fodder for the next episode's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, and that you've agreed to lose.
Yes, your fodder and your mutter.
Okay.
If you want to listen to the show, it's available anywhere podcasts are available, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or you can go to yourlastmealpodcast.com if you're old school and you want to listen on the computer. And my Instagram is Hello Rachel Bell, so you can look at me, listen to me, more me. I need a lot of attention, guys.
All right. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show with Rachel Bell. Coming up next, Tasty Trivia on 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are joined by Rachel Bell, Cairo Radio's outlandish personality. See what I mean? Amy, do you want to tell us, we're going to do our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Do you want to tell us how the game is played?
Yes.
And then who's going to be our winner? And I can tell you today, this trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Made right here in Ballard at my company. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop or online. Or I know the QFC has them at markets, PCC, you name it. They're all over the place. And Bartels. So go out there and check out our Rub With Love. It's pretty darn tasty.
Okay, the three of you, you are each going to play Tasty Trivia. I'm going to ask you five questions, and the loser is paying for shipping to our winner, who is Kristen. Kristen sent in the bulgogi-inspired ground beef dish, which I think sounds amazing. And Kristen, you're going to win a beefy prize of steak rub, roast rub, exotic mushroom rub, and ancho molasses barbecue.
Oh, my God. That's going to cost Rachel like $8 to ship.
Yeah. No.
I'll take it out of your wallet.
Okay, Thierry, we're going to start with you, and then we'll ask Rachel, and then Tom will close it. So, are you ready, Thierry?
I am totally ready. Go ahead.
Okay. Fill in the blanks in this commercial for McDonald's. Two blank patties, special sauce, lettuce, blank pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
You have to get it exactly right, Chef, because I know you're a McDonald's snob.
What? Was there two blank in there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with the sausage link, I guess. I have never seen that commercial, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Everyone's favorite sausage link burger.
I don't know. I have no idea.
That is fantastic, Jerry. You can't make this stuff up. That is fantastic.
I'm thinking link.
All beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
All right. Question two. What is the name of this steak? This American steak is actually an oval ground beef patty, usually seasoned with onion and broiled or grilled. It's often served with brown gravy.
Sloppy Joe? No, that's not actually Sloppy Joe. Actually, that's more like...
It's also the name of a town in Maryland.
Oh, it's a town in Maryland. That does not help me.
Okay.
Is this Salisbury steak?
You are correct.
It is. Too bad it doesn't count for you, Miss Bell.
No. Okay. You lost that one too. All right, question three. How long have the USDA standard existed in the beef industry? Multiple choice. Since 1965, since 1950, since 1905, or since 1988?
I'm going to go with 50.
You are incorrect. It is 1965. All right. How many gallons of wine are in a barrel?
This is so hard.
115. I'm just guessing.
55.
Oh, you're close. 60.
60.
Okay.
There we go. 0-4. Yeah. That is a good score so far.
You should play for the Mariners.
You should be feeling good about this.
I am.
All right, last question. What is the most widely planted grape in the world?
Is it vinifera or a table? Is it a wine grape Zinfandel. Or a table?
It's a wine grape.
It's a wine grape.
Zinfandel. I'm just going to guess. Out of, excuse me, I mean, Cabernet?
No, you're getting there.
Which one is it?
It's a Cab Sauv. Should we give it to him?
Cabernet Sauvignon. Yeah. No, it's Zinfandel.
All right, we're giving you zero.
Yeah. Oh, it's delicious.
It has two links floating in every bottle.
All right, Rachel.
Okay.
You have to get one question right so far.
After all that smack talking, I have to do better than Thierry.
All right. Finish this Julia Child quote for me. Every woman should own a...
Oh, I love Julia Child. She's my idol, and I've never heard this. Every hammer...
Blowtorch.
I was thinking
a blowtorch.
Blowtorch. Okay, it wasn't far off because I knew it wasn't going to be some put a woman in a kitchen kind of thing. So that's cool. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Can you name three types of meringue?
Italian meringue, Swiss meringue, and French meringue.
Yay!
Wow,
yay.
That was very impressive.
You're
there.
The big winner
that's
so far.
Impressive. Yeah. Good job.
What was the world's first hamburger chain founded in 1921 in Wichita, Kansas?
I am going to go with Wendy's.
Ooh, White Castle.
I was going to say White Castle.
Oh, yeah. White Castle.
Wendy's is out of Ohio. Yeah.
Tom knows Wendy's.
It's my mom's favorite.
Okay. What is the name of this steak? This steak name is actually a recipe which was created in a city in England. The traditional recipe calls for a flank steak that is marinated and then broiled or grilled.
Just a steak that's been broiled or grilled?
Mm-hmm. It was a recipe which was created in a city in England.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the London broil.
Yay!
Yeah. Thank you for that, Amy.
I thought she was going to play Big Ben in the back.
Yeah.
Put a little Beatles on.
Yeah. Okay, last question. French meringue is a combination of egg whites and sugar. The sugar is gradually beaten into the egg whites. What is the difference between a French meringue and an Italian meringue?
Let's see how good you're doing the show.
I know, this is Meringue Fest. What is going on?
Well, there was a little segment on meringue earlier.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Is the question, what's the difference of how to make the meringue or like the finished product?
How to make it. So what's the difference? A French meringue is a combination of egg whites and sugar. So what is the difference between French and Italian?
Is the difference that you torch one of them and the other you leave soft?
No. I will tell you. Italian uses a simple syrup and French uses sugar.
A hot simple syrup.
Okay.
A molten 250 degree simple syrup. I just made it for the evening show, so I know all about this.
Okay, Tom. Okay. Question one. Early versions of Baked Alaska used what instead of meringue?
Whipped cream.
No, pie crust. Okay, question two. When the tenderloin strip has been removed from a short loin, the remaining steak is called what? A, shell steak. B, New York strip. C, Kansas City strip. Or D, all?
All of the above.
You're correct. How old
Thank
must...
Thank you for not meat-splaining us.
Yeah. Ooh, good one. How old must grade A beef for steak be according to the USDA? A, 9 to 22 months. B, 22 to 28 months. C, 12 to 18 months, or D, 24 to 36 months?
C.
No. A, 9 to 22.
9 to 22.
How many grapes does it take to make a standard bottle of wine?
A lot. A lot of grapes.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is like how many Skittles are in the state fair.
Okay, I'll give you an easy one. I was going to give you a harder one, but here's your last question.
No, he doesn't get an easy one.
That was correct.
No, you are wrong. About 200 grapes, 2.5 pounds.
Okay.
Okay, what restaurant made the quote, "Where's the beef?" famous?
Wendy's, of course.
Yay.
It wasn't the restaurant. It was the little old lady in the commercial.
Already fed him Wendy's earlier.
I know. But, you know, Thierry is still paying for shipping. He had 0 out of 5.
What did he have?
0 out of 5.
Okay, and who was our winner?
Kristen.
Hey, Kristen. You're going to get our Rub With Love special package for your beefsteaks and your ground meat, your ground beef, because we love ground beef around this show. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Amy Richardson, sound and production by Sean McFadden, and our editor, who's done a lot of work today, Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Remember, if you missed any episode of our Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.